No, though, but like, so they use coconut milk and condensed coconut milk, and then they use a little freaking cardamom and some your like whatever liquor. Well, I'm using Puerto Rican rum, like Bacardi.
It's gonna be good.
It's good. I would love to. I'll make it. Why does that have to be only in Christmas time? I'll make it year round. Next time I'm at your house, I'll make some coquito. hey, wait, we're rolling right now, aren't we?
Oh, yeah.
that's a loser leaves wrestling.
That's a classic opening. Classic. Great job.
This is another, great job to you. And a merry holiday to you, Moet.
Oh, thank you, Red. Yeah, it's my favorite time of the year. Happy holidays to you.
And happy holidays to our listeners all across the world. We got a new one in Japan. Very nice to meet you. very nice to meet you. Thank you so much. You one listener. They know we're talking about them too, which is very sweet. Very sweet.
This
is Loser Lee's Wrestling. This is the woos and whats. The woos and whats of AEW Dynamite. And boy, what a show it was. This was we started late with this one because it was preemptive by a dumb basketball game. But we made it through.
That ending was exciting. That ending was very exciting. I was forced to watch it because I was waiting for wrestling so we could do our job. But did you see that ending? That was something.
I thought I was late for Dynamite. I was like 3 minutes into it. I was just like, oh shit, it's starting. And then I caught them signing off. So I didn't miss anything of the wrestling. But I have no idea what happened with the game. Fun game?
I mean, it looked really exciting if I cared about basketball. But I don't. I just got to see a lot of angry, upset faces, just people like, I'm taking this so seriously. It probably looked like how I feel when I watch, Dynamite. So.
Well, if we get enough listeners, we'll do the woos and whats of TNT basketball. But until then, until we get that kind of feedback, we're going to be doing this. If we just finished the show and interesting. What are your over-the-top thoughts? What are off the top of your head? What are you thinking about this
I think
show?
They tried some things out, I feel, to try to get the basketball crowd, which I think is smart. Some marketing things,
Sure.
Like starting with Chris Jericho is the very first thing. Very smart. I don't think, I think it was like 60% good. I think there was a lot of just mediocre stuff, but some good stuff. It was just right in the middle.
Started right
slightly
off
the to
top.
The right of the middle. Because I said 60%. Sorry.
Well, give us the top of the 60% moment. What's your number one move of the evening?
You know what? I got two. I guess we could break it down. Don't know. I'm lumping them together because I like them for the exact same reasons. Mm-hmm. But there's one that's clearly better. I like how in a couple of the promos tonight, they brought in real life scenarios that's happening to the performers. And they used it for their own character progression and storyline in very interesting and different ways. MJF did a really excellent promo with Santana Ortiz, and Sean Spears had a really good promo. But I feel like we should start with the MJF promo because I feel like there's more meat on that.
Sure.
More exciting things. He started it by talking to the cameraman. He says something like, I'm only bringing it in here because it's the right thing to do. I'm pretty sure is what something like that.
Something along those lines.
Thank you. Yeah. And then he walks in and then he talks to Santana, is it? Yeah. Because one of his family members passed away the past week. I can't remember who.
Yeah. It was his stepfather. So his mom's new husband or newer husband that passed away.
Yeah.
Santana.
So MJF, just very sincerely says, like, I know why you were gone last week, and I just want you to know, like, I've dealt with loss in my family, and if you need anything, I'm here for you. And then they hug, and it's actually, like, very sincere, and it almost kind of looks like MJF is starting to, like, break up, like he's, like, about to cry or something, it's like, it feels, like, emotional. And then he shakes Ortiz's hand, they walk away, and then in just the last moment of the promo, the camera just stared at MJF and he just changes. He just flips within the last literally like 3 seconds into this kind of sinister glare, but it's very subtle. It's a very subtle thing. Because it could very easily have been obnoxious, I think.
Sure.
But I think he pulled it off of just like, oh, that little bastard,
I guess
playing them.
I guess I had some weird mixed feelings on it. I almost wanted to put this as a what, but then I also wanted to put it as a woo. Because I thought it was interesting. It's definitely interesting that they even showed something like this. And one of I chalked it up in my brain. Like, I was going to put it as a what because it felt just weirdly out of character or just feel like out of nowhere. But I feel like it was almost like a nod to people who have lost someone during the holidays, mm-hmm. especially now. Like, so many people are losing someone, and where even people who hate each other, they could meet together and be like, you know, we'll find common ground right now. I took it as a really personal, overbroad message that they probably didn't mean. They probably didn't mean it that way. But I took it as a really sweet message, and I stopped looking too deep into it. Like, oh, that's not his character, blah, blah, blah. I was just like, well, you know what? That's actually kind of nice. That was kind of nice. And it was a sweet moment. I didn't get the glare at the end, though. I didn't see that glare. I saw as him seeing the camera and noticing he's showing emotion. He's just like, suck it in.
Oh, I can. Okay. I can see that too. I see, because to me, I put a lot of emphasis on like emotional emphasis on how he was handling the promo itself, because it sounded like he was trying to say the words and legitimately stumbling over them. Like maybe he thought about them beforehand. Like, you know, mm-hmm. he was thinking about what to say, and then actually saying it made him break character slightly. Mm-hmm. That's sort of how I felt it. So I was played. I felt totally played when I saw it, and I put a lot of extra emphasis on that look afterwards. I'm like, ah, that bastard, he fooled me, you know?
Sure, sure.
But but either way, I would agree with you that I felt like it was very sweet, and I'm glad that they did it, because at least it shows that Santana was, like, he had to be willing to say these, you know, or allow these very personal things to be on air, you know, and it just seemed nice that they would use it in a somewhat sincere way at first, at least.
Yeah, yeah. And I 100% with that. I thought that was very sweet. But to talk about that Sean Spears promo, because that is my number one woo of the evening.
Oh, good. I'm glad I brought both of them up. Yeah,
that Sean Spears one. Just to paint a little picture of it, Sean Spears has a sit-down interview with Tony Schiavone, and he just basically, he takes that black glove he's been wearing and throws it away. He's just like, I don't need this. I've never needed this. I've been at this company, and I am better than the majority of people at this company or any company. I don't need any stupid gimmicks. I came here like a ball of fire, and now I'm being squandered. And he's just like, I've seen this before. When I left New York, I saw this, and now I'm seeing it again here. I'm better than this. And that was the most refreshing promo. That's exactly what Sean Spears needs. But my only concern is, where do you go from here? I feel like I'm just nervous that it's going to continue this spiral, even though I think he deserves it. I love his character work. Even his stupid glove thing, like when he was bringing that out and when he was having that dazed look, I was saying weeks ago where he's just like, it's like he figured out the secret. He's figured out the secret, but he's still paired with Scorpio Sky. Bless Scorpio Sky. But, like, I don't see that going anywhere.
Well, so I think that was a nice way for them to let go of Tully. I think that's what the main point of it was that, like, that Tully just wants to stay with FTR and or whatever. And you don't always need a big blow-off sort of feud with your manager. You know, sometimes that just is. That's just
and it
how
might
it goes.
Be nice
maybe
later on down
time.
The road if they help him in some way or something like that. You could always make that reconnection.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, but also a big thing to me in that promo was Tony Schiavone saying that just bringing up, like, you know what the common denominator is? It's you. You're blaming everyone else, and you're blaming the management. You're blaming this meta audience that's watching, but like you're not, and your manager as well. But you're not checking on yourself in this promo. Like, don't you think you're in trouble? And then he blows that off, and he's like, no, of course not. Screw you. And I think that there's some seeds there that you could do something with.
You're right. You know, I kind of forgot about that.
Narcissism or something that could, you know, that they could work with. And I think that's exciting. And also, like, it's like everything he said was true, which I really appreciated that. Like, he came in very hot. Like, people were very excited. And now there's, you know, like it all vanished like within weeks. You know?
He's the,
like,
king of dark.
It's shocking how little I cared about him now in AEW compared to how much I cared about him when he was, you know, flashing the 10 symbol in NXT. So, like, he's got the talent. It's just something just fell in AEW. And hopefully this promo, like, he can find something to tap into.
Yeah,
I'm 100%. Excited about that. Yeah,
I hope so much for Sean Spears because he's a really captivating performer. Like when he talks and when he wrestles, I'm intrigued. Even though he's not the flashiest guy, he doesn't need to be. He's very grounded, and his eyes say so much. It's scary almost. It's scary.
Sure, sure.
I love it to death. But excellent, excellent. We're similar pages with our woos so far. Yeah, similar pages. What's your next woo, Moet? What you got?
Oh, boy. Let's talk about Dustin Rhodes versus Evil Uno.
Hell yeah.
I want to hear your thoughts on Evil Uno. That's, I want to, I think he went, I thought, so there was great selling, especially by Uno. He sold his hand. It got thrown into the ring post, I think, is the first thing that happened to him. And he sold it for the whole match afterwards. Mm-hmm. A lot of shaking of the head, and that just kind of slowed him down slightly with his like normally fast paced style, which I thought was great. Otherwise, just good storytelling, visual storytelling from both men in the match, and solid ending. Everything
and the
around
thing
it,
is,
I liked.
I feel like they're also very similar performers. Dustin and Evil Uno. Evil Uno is Dustin 20 years ago. I feel like he's a smart performer, a little bit out of shape, like a little bit pudgier than others, or a little bit, you know, a different body type. But what he does is he wrestles towards his limitations. You know, he's stomping on hands. He's trying to crack fingers. He's using the distractions and the ropes. He's using all the things that people forget about in wrestling. Like, they forget, like, oh, if you just stomp on their fingers, like, that's the first thing that he did. Like, when Dustin fell on the ground, he stomped on his fingers immediately and kicked him in the head. Like, it's just these little things that you could, like, you do in any fight, that you would do in any real fight. Like, if you're trying to get over on someone, you're not going to be like, I'm going to wait for you to stand up so I can punch you again. No, he's like, I'm going to diving forearm into you because you're on the ground and I'm standing now. You know, like these little things. And like just like what you said with the selling, he doesn't forget anything. Even at the end of the match, when he's raising his hand, it's even still bothering me. He's still trying to get him cracking his fingers to try and put them back into place, like because he needs to get feeling. Like, it's so smart. And he does it on just, it's simple. It feels simple when he does it. And I know it has a lot more thought to it because you get lost in the action. But boy, what a great match. Besides one thing, like, I do like the... I like the idea that was there wasn't a long match, and it was like Dustin should probably have gone over, but the Bulldog. I don't like the Bulldog as a finish. I don't like Dustin's Bulldog as a finish. It's a move that, you know, has grown pat. Like when he was using it in WCW in 1994, 95, sure, maybe. Even though the Steiners were doing a Bulldog all the time and it wasn't winning matches. But like the fact that nowadays he has other moves. He has other moves that he could do that he does well. Why is he doing that one? I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird that the Canadian Destroyer is a transition for him instead of the finisher, because it's such a flashy big move that he can do, and he does all the time, you know?
Yeah.
It's a strange choice. I don't know what he's doing with it.
It's a callback, and that's what it is. It's just a callback to WCW. That's all it is, because he did that in 95, and like that's all it is.
I mean, the current storyline he's got right now is an entire callback to WCW as well, to be fair. Yeah. So maybe there's something like further along in there. I don't know. I didn't like the immediate ending. I didn't like the ending with Dark Order trying to shake their hands.
Yeah.
And then Dustin kicks it away. It makes Nightmare Family look like assholes. So I don't know what they're trying to do with that exactly. Like, I don't like this gray storytelling. I'm still not used to it. It doesn't make sense to me.
You know what it is? It's not storytelling. that's the issue. Gray storytelling is not storytelling because you're able to change your mind next week. You know, like storytelling requires some sort of like a plan, an idea of where it's going to go. Like to build a story, you have to have some sort. Like I get the idea. If this. Like, you know, you're allowed to have a lot of gray at the beginning of a story, have a lot of questions being asked, but when the entire story is questions being asked, you know, like, there's never any resolution. We get no conclusion. We never feel satiated. I don't think I've ever felt satiated from AEW, even though I'm always intrigued. There's always parts where I'm, like, intrigued, like, oh, they asked a really good question, but they've never known how to answer them.
I don't know about that. Oh, well, actually, Yeah, that's a good way to put it, because I've been very excited by moments, but it's always their style of storytelling is like Attitude Era, where it's always just enough, but it leaves on a climax to get you to watch next week. So there's never a really satisfying like ending to something, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. It just is what it is.
It's probably like feeling like watching Lost when it was on and just having to wait another week and then just being like, here's another fucking boatload of questions. Why is there a polar bear? Like, just answer that. Why did Taz choke Cody out? Like, I'm still upset
about
that.
They're never going to answer it. They're going to say that they will. Just like Lost. God damn it, Lost. It's like been Lost. Too long. It's been half of my life now.
It really is.
I still can't think of it. All right. Wow.
Well, that was good. We're doing pretty good. I think we're doing good. Do you have another? We got some more woos coming up because I have some interesting ones.
Okay. Do you want to go for one?
Yeah, I'll give you one. Yeah. I like the Sting promo. You know what? I liked it. Tony Schiavone coming out.
List of what's. Yeah. But more the ending, more so the ending than the actual whatever Sting was saying. Yeah.
Let me break it down a little bit. Sting comes out. Tony Schiavone welcomes him out. For some reason, Tony Schiavone asked him the same question in his first interview, which is, are you glad to be back on TNT? Which he answered like, well, I think I already went over this, Tony, but it feels great. It feels like I've come full circle. And then he asked, like, why are you here? What's your unfinished business? And then he goes on a nice little story about Dusty Rhodes, which is fine. That was fine. And then he brings up Darby Allin. And then this is why I wish I put this at the end of my woos because I have some problems with it as well. But then Darby Allin, you see him in the corner and he's about to start talking shit about him. And then Team Taz comes out and starts to threaten Sting. And then Darby comes to the rescue. What I liked about what Taz said, Taz is just like, okay, Sting with a baseball bat. Darby Allin with a skateboard. We're going to take the higher road. At least he explained why they're not going in the ring. Rather than just being like, oh, a skinny kid and an old man with, like, basic weapons. Like, it's just, they could, again, but they're trying to take a high road. But I thought it was good. It was the simplest thing they could have done with Sting and Darby Allin that was acceptable and somewhat believable. So I gave it a woo.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, I didn't really feel that strongly either way. I just didn't know where to put it. I didn't like it, but didn't hate it. So, yeah, everything you just said, I would agree with. I think, I don't know. I'm still not used to this thing that talks normally and just is, you know, just happy to be there, but still has the moody as hell entrance. Like, it doesn't make sense to me still. That bothers me.
But I feel that's always been Sting.
It probably is. It probably
97 was the only year he was the cool Sting where he didn't talk. He didn't talk for a year, and that was the perfect Sting. But then in 98, he's just like, showtime! Woo! Come on! Woo! Let's fight everyone, guys! Like, he goes back to surfer dude talking, but he looks so menacing. I think this is the best they could do with him, and I'm fine with that.
I think so, too. Yeah, it gets ratings, probably. I don't know what the ratings are, but I bet people watch it. And I like that they're pairing Darby and Sting up. It's the obvious and correct thing to do. It's money. It's money just watching the two of them stare at each other. I'm into it.
Yeah.
You know, it's fun. It's so cheesy, but it's fun.
It's cheesy, but also, like, when I see them, I'm just like, Sting could kick this little shit's ass. Like, he's like a foot taller. like a 60 pounds heavier. Like, it's just so funny to see them try to make them look like, oh, well, I'm the new kid on the block, and he literally looks like Calvin from Calvin and Hobbes.
He really does. That's a good, yeah, that's real good.
Like a little
I think
kid.
It's just fun. I mean, it looks like it's his dad. His dad is just like real upset.
You're right.
At his kid.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, it's his dad. That's actually very funny.
I thought that was like the point.
I didn't even think of that. I even connect them, but that's it. That's his dad. That's his total dad. That's very funny. That's very funny. Cool. At least Darby Allin's not talking. You know, he's doing the thing right by like not saying words because he's not a convincing talker. So for him to just be moody in the corner, moody in the ring, don't give him a mic. Excellent.
Imagine if Darby talked like Sting does. Like, he's very moody. He saw his skateboard. Is that he gets to the ring. Like, hey, everybody! Oh, remembers my, I was just hanging out with my friend, Tony Hawk!
But wait, one thing I did want to mention to you was when Taz is like, we'll live to fight another day. We'll take the high road. And then Brian Cage is, why not now? And I was like, that's the best thing Brian Cage has ever said. I want to fight now. Like, that's the attitude he should have, rather than being this just little freaking nerd, just, who better? Who better than me? At least he's saying, well, I want to fight him now. Like, at least he's saying something constructive towards his character.
Oh, no, I like it. Just small issue. I can't give him points for that because he didn't bother, like, picking the mic up, you know, to actually speak into the mic. We could barely hear what he was saying, so he had to be like, what? What happened? And then he had to say it again. And I, and lack of points for, like, no physical intimidation, you know? Like, he should have, like, understood that nobody can hear him. He should have put, not necessarily pushed Taz, but some sort of, like, right. Let me at him. Let me go, you know?
He didn't need to grab the mic, but as long, I wish they tried to hold him back. Like, he tried to bomb rush the show, and then Hobbs is like, no. But we have to talk about this because we talked about it in text. Ricky Starks acting like a tiger. Taz reference like, you're in the jungle, because Sting kept saying he's in the jungle. And then Taz like, speaking of, we got a bunch of tigers. And then Ricky Starks just starts roaring. Like, just growling.
Very obnoxious, very like exaggerated. Like very, big bites, you know?
Very dumb, but very fun. Excellent job, great, Ricky.
Amazing acting choice. Amazing choice that he made. I would never make that choice.
No.
So that's what makes him brilliant, is he found the confidence, you know.
I could imagine if I were Taz, I'd be very upset at that choice. But I'd be very furious, trying to be taken seriously, and the guy next to me is rawr, like claws and everything. It was very silly. Excellent. Well, Moet, what's our next woo we got going on?
It's a quick one, most likely, I'm predicting, but I like Kip and Miro's whole promo. I thought they kind of worked out some kinks in it. Oh, you did not like it. Oh, you're so shocked that I threw that in. Oh my gosh.
I farted from shock.
Oh my gosh. Well, it's bad, but they've been so off rhythm for like ever since Miro's arrival, essentially. I just haven't figured out what the hell they're doing together. What's going on? But here's what I like. So it's essentially just a big announcement that in February 6th or whatever it seems like an entire episode dedicated to the wedding. I don't know. They got their own title is what I'm thinking. Sure. They don't usually do their own title for an episode, you know, unless it's a big deal, like Holiday Bash or whatever. Mm-hmm. But here's what I liked. I liked that Kip had the mic. I liked that they gave him the spotlight because it's a good balance between him and Miro. Gives the mic to Miro every now and then to say a couple of like impressive big scary man, you know, lines, but Kip is the fast talker, intelligent, you know, can do it, right? I liked they did a swerve with Best Friends coming out. I legitimately thought the Best Friends were going to come out because that's such a pro wrestling thing to be like, here's the big plot reveal, and then it doesn't happen. So I like that. I like that they played us. And yeah, I think that's essentially the two main things for it that I thought were good. I didn't like that they the last thing I liked is that they actually brought the wedding angle back.
Sure.
I also legitimately thought that they just brought it in so they could use this stupid nickname, the best man, and then just completely forgot about it. So I'm glad it's actually still a thing. One thing I didn't like is that Penelope didn't talk at all, and it seems like that's just how her role is. It's annoying.
That's what women are in AEW. That's how they treat women in AEW. And I was realizing this watching Being the Elite. Like, I'm wondering, like, oh, why aren't there more women representation on Dark and Dynamite and stuff like that? And why aren't they treated sensibly on Dynamite? And I was just like, oh, it's because the VPs of AEW don't have any women friends. You know, all their friends are these guys. They don't have any women friends, so they don't get any spotlight besides Brandy. And she's the only one that does get a spotlight, and it's not a very deserving spotlight. And for
you got Brandy and Britt Baker, who's the wife of one of their really good friends from the Bullet Club, Adam Cole.
Okay.
So that's also another, that's another one that you could kind of point to, be like, hey, well, she got these, she earned it, but she also, she didn't start that way.
But you, you get, but you get what I'm, she didn't start that way, but she's earned her spot now, even though they still don't give her her just due, because she should be on every, if they're having fucking Young Bucks on every single Dynamite when they can't talk a lick, if they're having, or the, just the people that they have on there, like the SCU should never be on a Dynamite where Britt Baker isn't. Like,
well, okay. So my, my one issue, you're doing, this makes sense, but my one thing with that is she, about her earning it is that she earned it because she got the time week after week. She was allowed to be there and screw up and get the, to the training. And there's countless performers. A lot of the, you know, the female performers could just as easily get that to that level if they give them the spotlight.
We're on the same
page. So
that's
what's annoying.
I agree entirely. And that's, that's a big issue because, like, for instance, like, that was a very easy spot for Penelope to have something. She should have been the one making the announcement, not Kip. Kip should have been there and said some goofy things, and Mira should have been there and said some goofy things, but let her have a talking piece, at least for the wedding. At least the wedding have something to say.
I would say for equality. I don't think if you're going to do that, I'd say they both should have been talking equally because it's a wedding. You know, it's not one person getting married. They're both getting married. It should be a big thing. It shouldn't just be her talking. If that's what you're
saying. I'm
saying,
like, she's never had an opportunity. This entire storyline so far is my best friend Miro, best man Miro's here. And now we could have our wedding. My best man Miro. She's never had a thing to say. She should do the majority of the talking for this one because of her lack of talking the entire storyline. Yeah, I think she should have said everything in this one just to have some character. Why do I care that they're getting married?
Look, I agree with you, but I also completely see myself getting just as pissed off with that angle of like, oh, you don't talk about, you don't talk at all for months. And the one time you talk is for a wedding, that's so typical of the woman, the bride, to be obsessed with it. And then that could easily turn into a bridezilla.
I'm saying it's an
angle.
It could be that, but it could be anything. It could be absolutely anything. Knowing AEW, sure, it's going to be a Bridezilla angle, but it could have been anything. This was a golden opportunity for her to have a lot of mic time, and they just squandered it again with Miro shouting, smile shouting, yelling at Tony to smile and shaking him. The guy has a neck injury. Leave Tony alone. They should stop touching Tony's neck.
Okay. Relax about Tony.
I have more to say about that soon.
I feel like we basically agree, but we're just arguing about like nuance here. Because
either way, I felt that I don't know. I felt I'm excited for. I always love wrestling weddings. I'm a sucker for them. I just want them not to screw this one up, and they're doing a bad job so far for me. But there's still opportunity. They got a month. They got a month, five, 6 weeks, something like that.
Well, I guess this is more of a what than a, we didn't talk about any of the things I liked about it.
No, we did. We did.
Move on?
You said that it was, okay, let me say this then. I did enjoy the shock with the best friends. I thought that was good. And I liked them laughing.
Okay, thank you, Red. Thank you. All right, let's move on. My next one is I liked the Jurassic Express versus Dark Order match. Okay. Basically, I just like that there were great combos between both teams, as they should be, because they're both, you know, very well-honed together teams, you know. They're not just thrown together as a three-man team or whatever, you know. So I like that. One thing was, I thought they're just odd tag rules. I think that's been even worse than the Young Bucks match later on. Sorry, but just like odd, just the referee just completely ignoring who's legal or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's a common thing. We can complain about that in a few minutes, I'm sure. But the combos. I think it's just very exciting that that's becoming more consistent and mainstream to have these insane like video game combos, you know, in tag team matches, which I'm clearly a fan
of.
And I am too.
One other thing is, and I get on Jurassic Express a lot about this, about them kind of waiting to set one up or taking a long time to set up their big combos. But this time they were really crisp. I think they did a really good job, and they were really fun. And they were throwing Luchasaurus was throwing Marco violently, like violently. He dropped him real one time, real hard on his head. You see that?
No, I did not. Yeah, that sounds bad.
He dropped him real hard, and then you see him afterward just be like, "I'm so sorry." You see Marco holding his head. One critique of this, though, is when Ten was in the ring versus Luchasaurus, Luchasaurus no-sold Ten's offense the entire match. Like, anytime Ten did something, he no-sold it. And I was just like, Ten, while he's not your equal Luchasaurus, you're bigger and you're stronger and you're a dinosaur, Ten is the powerhouse of their group. You should be selling some of his things. And he totally blew off his boot. And like when they went to go have a punch back and forth, he just stopped him and started clobbering. Like, he just wasted him. And I felt like, I don't know, I'd like Ten to be taken more seriously because I like Ten.
Yeah, he's got a good look to him. Yeah, it's weird. It's weird. I guess there's no real excuse there. People love Luchasaurus.
They do love Luchasaurus. It. They do. That's it. But one of what was really great afterward. Really great afterward. FTR up on the big stage calling the Jurassic Express out, and then Tully being like, "And if you, Marco Stunt, get in the way, I might have a little flashback to the 80s because he did a lot of acid in the 80s. So he's going to have these acid flashbacks to the 80s. And he's going to start.
Oh, that's what that meant. That's I did not meant. Get the reference that's whatsoever other than I thought maybe Marco had some problem in the 80s, you know, because he said that as a threat, you know, sure. Like, what did Marco do? What's, you know, but.
I think that was a Freudian slip. I don't think he was purposely trying to say he did drugs, but it sounded that way when he said it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very strange. But no, that's what he did. No, that's 100% what he was talking about. The acid flashbacks, because why else would he say it that way?
Because I think he's a Freudian slip. I think he's still on drugs. I think. But I like the idea of Tully versus Marco Stunt. I love that so much. Even though when I realized, Moe, and I think this is where we're going to differ, there's a point in wrestlers' careers where I'm like, when they hit 30s and then their 40s, and then I'm like, when they're somewhere in their 40s, the 50s range, I'm just like, I don't want to see this anymore. I'm sorry, I don't want to see this anymore. But when they start to hit their 60s, I'm like, they still got it. They got one left in them. And I have this thought in my head, like, just let them have one. Let them have one good one. And I have that with Tully. I don't want him to have a match, but I want him to beat the shit out of Marco Stunt so bad.
Oh, God. It's a fear. I think it's a fear of mortality, right? I think sure. you're, and you just on hope. You want hope that's like, that could be us. We could be in a ring in our 70s and be like old men, like, hey, let me at it, let me go, and then a quick wink to each other, like, still got it. Don't worry, we still got it. We're mad. They all think we're dangerous, no, but we're sweet.
That's
we're
not actually it. Sick.
I think that's what it
I'm
is.
So
that's
upset what, with you. Yeah.
That's what I see. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, I have a fun woo that I wanted to bring up with you. Don Callis speaks the truth. I thought he had a really good quick interview with what his face is, Alex Marvez and yeah. Kenny Omega. They just said some quick, simple things, and he brought up something that I thought was really good. He's just like, what is Tony Khan doing? He just lets these wrestlers do whatever the fuck they want. Out comes Pac, and he just makes a match for himself. He just makes a match. He just chooses who makes the match, like, as if they have any say. And I just like, that is so true, Don Callis. Why can't you run this company? That's what I was thinking. And Kenny Omega was good, too. I thought Kenny Omega did a good job in that as well.
I also like how he was like, never in my 30 years of wrestling have I ever seen this. Like, that happens every week. What are you talking about? That's the whole, like, plot line of, you know,
that is
80% of the story is like, we're going to fight next week. Like, oh, my God.
That is real. And it's not exclusive to AEW. That's just a wrestling trope. But, yeah, like, the idea that, like, AEW is flagrant with it. They are flagrant with their abuses of responsibility and authority.
Well, they try a little bit better, I think, than a lot of other promotions, because they majority of the time they at least, you know, say like, I just talked to Tony Khan and he agreed to this match, sure. You know.
At least they threw that
a little bit. Otherwise, they're still using the same trope, mm-hmm. You know. Yeah, I like it's like the same like they did early on where they would be like, I have to win this match because you know, I need to pay, you know, pay off my car loans or whatever. Like they bring in the money of winning the match. And then it's like, oh, if there's no, you know, everyone has a motivation, even if there's not really a storyline, like, oh, you want to win so you get more money. That makes sense.
Makes sense. Like capitalism. Heath, like Heath Slater. He just, like him bringing up that, he's just like, I need to feed my kids. Like that is a brilliant, and I wish they did more with that.
It's good.
Do you have any other woos, Moet? Any other woos?
Nah, that's it.
I got a sneaky one in here. Just the Inner Circle Top Flight. I thought they did.
I actually had that up there, but I was like, I just want to move on. Sure. But yeah, no, I do like that.
I thought it was a good match. I thought it was a good match, and I thought Top Flight, like this was the best Top Flight match. Everything they did was pretty crisp. Like if you're looking for good double team maneuvers, I thought they did a great job.
Yeah, I actually am really glad that you brought this up, because of the next what I'm going to drop, because this is great. But because it's a good transition, because what they did great in the Top Flight Inner Circle match was they made me care about Top Flight. Like, I didn't think they were going to win. You know, they're going against MJF and Jericho, the two top performers, you know, one of the top in the company so far. But they made me hate Jericho and MJF. They did some good heel moves, but because they stopped and a majority of their double team moves, any of their like face moves were stopped, and I just wanted to watch that. They made me want to see what they could do, because the few things they gave us were really like surprising and new and unique offense. So fiery. It makes me want to see more from Top Flight.
Very excited for great them. Great job. And what I'm excited for, I just like brothers tag teams. Like I really do like TNT Devon's kids.
Mm-hmm.
They're great.
Yeah, you like them.
I love brothers.
I haven't seen them.
They fought
brother teams
on dark. They fought the Gun Club.
Oh,
so
good.
It was like Devon's kids versus Billy's kids. It was
fun.
It was pretty fun. It was pretty sweet.
That is, good history there.
They all shook hands at the very end.
Cute.
So what's this big what? What is this big juicy what that you got?
That's not that juicy, but the Young Bucks versus Acclaimed. I thought Acclaim got buried, and that's, I feel very frustrated by, because it's the Young Bucks. They're the friggin', you know, bosses of the company. How do they not see what's happening? You know, they're not like, you know, Impact or WCW. Like they're more savvy and aware of how they treat their talent overall. So why would they do this to them? You know, they just essentially did their own Young Bucks match style. But the thing is, the Acclaimed, from the little I've seen, they don't seem to have the same like combos that other teams do, or not as many. And they're more like
they're more grounded, more traditional two guys that are paired together team.
Where the Young Bucks have like perfected this style, and they essentially created it, or at least maybe not created, but they really pushed this like fast paced, multiple combo tag team style, right? So they've been doing it for so long, and so when they had offense, they just made them look like idiots. They were flipping around throughout the entire, you know, arena, practically jumping around through the ring, double like one Young Buck at a single time would knock out both of them consistently over and over again. And then they had this horrible sharpshooter spot where they, Matt had one of them in the ring with a sharpshooter, and then the other guy came in to stop, and he hits Matt a couple times. The ref does nothing. He hits him, and the Matt just stares at him. The ref still doesn't be like, hey, that's a DQ. You're trying to, what's going on? Nothing, you know? And then Matt's like, you know, hit me harder. Like, that's all you got or whatever. And then it's like, the one thing they get, they just look like idiots. And then he gets tossed to the outside. He gets a sharpshooter put on him outside. I'm just upset because it's such a new team, and their intro was so good. They got, like, they're doing their, you know,
that rap video was fun.
Oh, the rap was good, but they were getting booed, like, really heavily, to the point that you could barely hear his lyrics at time. And, like, it seems like the audience, they're catching on. The audience wants to hate him, you know? Yeah.
You're entirely
done
right.
Dirty.
You're entirely right. The Young Bucks really know how to get themselves over. But I can't think of a team that they help get over. Every team that they face, they're wrestling like is a dance. Like, you want your match to be the best on the card, but you shouldn't look like the best wrestler on the card. You know, your match has to be the best one. That's what you should be striving for. So the thing is, they make sure they get all their shit in every single match, no matter what. It's like paint by numbers. But the thing is, they don't know how to... they don't know their limits. They don't see themselves as having any weaknesses. You know, like, if for instance, any other tag team, well, or Jurassic Express, you know what? Luchasaurus is really good, but Jungle Boy is a little smaller. So when a big guy comes in, he's a liability or something like that. Or like FTR, they're not the strongest guys or the fastest guys, but they know how to work smart. Young Bucks and their brain are invincible. They think they could do everything and anything, and then they do it every match. And so it's like, oh, you're expecting all these things, so it's kind of boring at a point. And not only that, because they're getting all their shit in, that's very crisp, well-timed, and very beautiful, everyone else looks like garbage because no one's done that for that many years. These guys are new. Like you said, give them something. You know, let them shine for a little bit. They didn't shine once. They didn't shine once, and they didn't allow them to. They look, Young Bucks look like a million bucks. Pardon the pun. Even though I think they should change that S to a dollar sign. I think that'd be good.
Yeah. I think so. No, I think for me, it's a case-by-case basis with the Young Bucks and who their opponents are, where, like, they can have really great matches. And I
with really great opponents.
But that's it. Yeah. But where you're right is that they don't seem to care overall what they always get themselves over. Yeah. So the great matches work if the talent, the team that they're facing, can also get themselves over in an equally exciting way, like the Lucha Brothers.
Or FTR.
Yeah. Those are great matches. And sometimes I don't care if it's just a Young Bucks showcase because they're really, really good at what they do. But here it's annoying because there was so much, like, there's so much hope in the Acclaim. Mm-hmm. They put so much... like they pushed them. They gave them a really good push and it looked like it was working. So and it's not going to kill the Acclaimed.
No.
It's nothing, like, they're fine. It's just frustrating. Like, why, you know, give them even more of a chance instead of like this doesn't help the Young Bucks or the Acclaimed.
This feels
it's
like
just a match.
This feels like a Young Bucks versus Top Flight a couple weeks ago. It's the same thing. It felt like another Young Bucks match. It didn't feel any different. Didn't feel special. But look what happens when Top Flight faces Jericho and MJF. You know, they have a great match because there's an active... they're both trying to make the other team look good. And MJF and Jericho know we don't need to look as good because we have so much built-in clout from years, or MJF's case, like a couple of years of really doing great work, that we could take a back seat in this one. Young Bucks don't know how to take a back seat to let the other people up. And that's especially with newer guys, if they want to build a younger roster, you have to be able to do that. For shame. For shame. Peel the carrot.
Yeah.
Peel the carrot.
What's that mean? Oh, peel the carrot because it's like a...
it's like a carrot and a peeler.
Sand. Yeah, your finger and then the peeler over it. Yeah.
I guess the audience doesn't know that unless we describe
it. I was trying my best to explain it.
That was very good. It was the tisk tisk. Very good. I even think that. Your 3D, 4D chess. 4D chess moment. What's your next big what of the evening? What do you got?
Here's two together as well. One, because the women's division... is the common thread through these two. And one of them is too quick. Jade Cargill gives a really crappy promo because she doesn't know how to parse out her dialogue. She doesn't know how... the rhythm is ridiculous.
That was a good illustration. That was very good.
It drives me crazy.
Yeah.
Because there's no way to stop this once it gets going.
You should voice over
Jade. It's a train. It's a runaway train.
We should just take this audio and put it over Jade's with the warp mouth.
I just hate. It's small. I didn't even hear what she was saying in it because I was so distracted that it's like, oh, she did it. It was atrocious when she did it with Cody on the ring. Like, oh, she, you know, it's fine. But no one talked to her about it. No one like gave her tips. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Number two. Same deal as the Abaddon. I think it was a waste for her to attack Sheeta in the back, and then Sheeta to not like be affected by it at all. You know, no selling when she goes out to the ring. A little bit, just a tiny bit of her like kind of having an urgency to the match, I guess. But it didn't feel like it affected anything. And then Abaddon appears, which is cool. I thought I think they could have just done that, yeah. You know.
It would have been so much better. That would have been, if they didn't have that.
Just have her.
Yeah.
Just have her appear, just pop up, and then it's kind of freaky, and you're like, you know. But then she got the crap kicked out of her again, Abaddon. And, like, even when she, like, comes back and, like, bites, like, she, it just didn't work. It just, it, nothing, it didn't, yeah, it bothered me more.
I just have a general problem with Abaddon, her gimmick. And, you know, like, I haven't really seen her have a match that I really enjoyed. She's all character. Like, that's who she is. She's all character. And the reason she's getting pushed is because of her character. Because it's not because of her work. There are other wrestlers on the roster that are better workers than her. It's just that her character is so... the people are into it, I guess. Like, she has a following and people like her, I suppose. I like the biting thing. I like the biting on the neck. I thought that was cool. I was like, she got blood going. It was very vampire-y. So, like, that's the best thing I've seen Abaddon do that made her look like a threat. But up until this moment, she hasn't looked like a threat. And she also doesn't wrestle like a threat. She's a little awkward. She's a little awkward for that character. When you're that stoic and, like, supposed to be menacing when she's just standing there, looks great. But when she walks and she kind of stumbles, or she's kind of awkward getting back up, or she's not a very quick, and that character needs to be quick and fluid in order to care, like, think it's cool. When you're stumbling and bumbling, it's not that great. What do you think about her as a character?
I'm a fan because it's so it's just crazy.
No, I get it.
Obnoxious. It's great, but you're not the first one I've talked to about this. It seems like there's an issue, and I think what everyone's stumbling on is a short shelf life. Like, they haven't given, she's invincible because of her character. There's no, like, she's won, I think, every match. No. She actually lost to Shida earlier, sure, and some other people. But, like, in general, she comes off invincible. And because you fight, like, a Japanese horror monster, like, they should be, like, unstoppable. Like, you know, facing any, like, monster villain, you know, Jason or someone, Freddy or whatever. But how does that equal a wrestling character? There's no nuance or depth to it yet.
Yeah.
And that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And this feud hasn't shown any of it either as well. It's still the same.
And how could you?
Yeah.
How could you even show that? You know, like, how could
I
you?
I don't know.
Yeah. Like, one thing if she could just do this, because like the Undertaker, because the best way to compare is to the Undertaker, I guess, or that type of mythical character. And, like, the Undertaker, remember when he first came out? He didn't have expressions on his face. He wasn't growling and snaring and drooling. He was stoic and quiet. And then when he ended up doing those things, it meant something. When he showed a grimace, it meant something more. When he looked angry, but otherwise he was just flat. He was flat when he came out, and he was flat when he left. She should be flat. Like, have her eyes look the same way, face paint, her mouth have that red stuff come out, but just have it just be flat. So then when she does growl, it's scary, because if you're constantly growling, like, that's why Jason Voorhees Michael Myers are so scary, is because of their expressionlessness. You know, like, if she comes, she doesn't seem scary. It looks like she's trying too hard.
Well,
every single time she comes out, it looks like she's trying really hard to be scary.
Well, it doesn't work if she's fully stoic. Because the influences she's going off of are like the ring, you know, the Japanese ring and things like that. Like, it's a different style. Mm-hmm. Like you're right that those movies are scary because they're the stoicism, but that's not the thing. But what I'm hearing from you is that you want, like, emotional range.
Yeah.
And I would agree with that. It's all
ring.
It's all just the same screaming kind of unstoppableness, but we can't really tell when she's hurt or when she does
exactly.
Like, kind of, like, lay down, you know, when she sells, it's like, it feels phony.
Yeah.
Because we don't see it, mm-hmm. From her. We don't know where to place that.
Exactly.
I agree with that.
And I guess, like even with the ring, to use as an example, like, her hair was in front of her face up until, like, maybe midway or later in the movie when you saw what she looked like, you know?
Yeah.
Like, for instance, or show, like, the simple things, like, tilt your head, you know, that type of stuff can show, like, if you're going for that type of character, even those have some levels, you know? Only later did she start to growl and sneer at the end of the movie. Like, if she was growling and sneering at the end of the movie, by the second time you saw her, you'd be like, oh, cool. Like, there's no build. Like, and I feel like she's already went to the deep end. She's already at 10, and there's nowhere to go from here. But back to Dark.
Yeah, that's what I like about her for now, and that's what I was saying about the short shelf life is like you built up this unstoppable monster. So how does a champion stop the monster?
Yeah.
And that's a fun storyline to play off of. And because the champion should be scared because it is a terrifying creature that she's supposedly fighting. Except the way it's built is you just stop it by hitting it with a kendo stick a bunch of times. Sure. And not actually being scared, like, you know, and poking it, I guess. I don't know. It just feels a missed opportunity.
I agree.
There's no depth to the story either. That's what I'm coming.
You hear that, TK? I actually said something on the thing. I said Abaddon's not ready on the YouTube page, and it got 4 likes.
Oh, look at that.
Watch out, TK. We're coming at you. What's your next big woo? Big what of the
next one. There's just bad timing, I feel like, all around. Mm-hmm. In the episode, the end of the pack and Butcher match, even though I liked that match for what it was, I thought it was just a very quick, fun sort of exhibition style match, you know, kind of like the first level to mm-hmm. get to Eddie Kingston or whatever. Just bad timing in the ending where Eddie wanted to come out, but then he gets stopped by Lance Archer, and then Eddie backs up. It was just,
and then Butcher stops in the ring for what seems like 2 whole minutes where he's not doing anything.
So he stops holding he's holding Pac, and he's kind of playing to the audience, and then Eddie's like, stop, you know, like, you know, just like go finish, don't like stop, don't stall, you know, or whatever he's saying, something like that. And I think it's just Lance. I think he had to stall because that was the end of his thing. That was Lance's cue, but Lance didn't come out, and it just was enough to take me out of the whole thing, and not care. Yeah.
I don't know who's at fault for that, but I want to blame the Butcher because I feel Butcher is constantly getting confused or missing opportunities or forgetting what he's supposed to. I feel like watching, and I like this match because mostly because of Pac. I think Pac is a really great worker. Butcher, I love his look so much, and I want so much every single time he comes out because he could do so much, but he fucks up a lot, like a lot, where it's like, it's distracting. But yeah, 100% that timing thing at the end. I don't know who's at fault. I want to blame Butcher.
I don't think it's Butcher's fault. Even if you're right in that he like jumped the gun and Lance Archer didn't understand, Eddie still caught up. Like other people in the story were able to catch up. So like Lance was probably just standing there in the back, like waiting for his cue, watching. Like if he sees that and he sees Eddie, he should just jump it because that and improvise and jump out. You know.
Well, I don't. I don't think it's Lance's fault personally. Just because I feel their managers, their people backstage, they're doing waiting for cues. They're like, go now. Someone's in Gorilla telling them when to leave. Someone's in Gorilla. So they're probably waiting for Eddie Kingston to make a move to his cue. He was probably like, Eddie Kingston was supposed to be here so we could go there. And Eddie Kingston was waiting for Butcher to do something so he could get to his cue. But Butcher's just standing there. Like, he was literally, like, I want to watch it again because it felt like 30 seconds of him just looking around for what to do. And maybe it was Eddie Kingston's fault. But
I don't think it's Butcher's. I really don't think, because I think Butcher was supposed to just hold him in that one spot, and Eddie was supposed to scream about, maybe. Like, if anything, yeah, like, anything, maybe Eddie should have gone off the mic faster, and then that was Lance's cue to, like, be angry and push Eddie back or something like that. But I really think that was what the end of Butcher's thing was supposed to be, and then somebody slowed down around him, and that's he didn't know. He's stuck in this position, literally in the middle of the ring. Like, he can't hit Pac and continue the match.
With you entirely. It probably isn't Butcher's fault. It's probably all Eddie Kingston's fault. Which brings to my next what of the evening. Eddie Kingston with a big circle around him. I do not want him on commentary anymore. I almost had to mute the match because he is a bad commentator. That doesn't know how to get the storyline over, doesn't know how to communicate. Like, the things I get, he's trying to get his character over, and for some reason, he hates Tony Schiavone so much. Everyone on the show hates Tony Schiavone. That's like a big running joke that no one explains. But Eddie Kingston takes it to a level that's absolutely harmful to the match. He was talking over Excalibur and Tony Schiavone the entire time. He was had this inside joke where he's only nice with JR, which is it's funny for like the first and last second, but it's just I couldn't stand it. I couldn't stand it. He is the worst guest commentator I've ever heard in wrestling.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know if he's the worst, but I think he might be a little too mean. Just recency bias. I don't know.
May he rest in peace, and we'll never hear from him again.
But I agree. Everything he said, I agree with, though, besides that fact, is that it was a very annoying thing to hear him jump over. It's just someone that I love. I love his work. I love everything he does. It's just something is off. I don't know. Why does he... What's wrong with you, Eddie?
Why?
Just get it right.
I just want him to turn it down to a 5. To a 5. And get to those moments sometime. It's just like with Abaddon. Him and Abaddon are being coached by the same person. They're just like, yeah, just do all the things at once right now. Like, no.
It's Taz.
It's Taz. God damn it, Taz. You're right. It's fucking Taz. It sounded exactly like him.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Well, you go Rocket Buster. Okay, Captain Obvious.
Yeah, god damn it.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Stupid.
Stupid Taz. God damn it, Taz, we love you, but stop telling these good wrestlers to do everything all at once. Lord God, Mowat,
you do
Lord
it.
Lord God, Heavenly Mowat. Any other what's it. Of the evening? You got anything else?
Nah, that's it. That is it. That's all the issues I have.
Well, you know what? That was an AEW Dynamite that was 60% good and 40% bad, and that's official.
Thank you. That's official.
Yes. That is there damn official. I wasn't sure about it first, but after doing the math and I carried all the numbers, 60-40 split. Very good, Moet. That was crazy.
I'm good at those percentages. I appreciate it.
You're a real mathematician. What was it? You're Mr. Backlund. Your bad guy persona is Bob Backlund. I imagine you being a mathematician when you go to the ring and you're acting like Bob Backlund, but you're like, my numbers say that this guy is gonna lose.
Well, that's great. Yeah. That's great. That sounds that means I'm smart.
Yeah,
that's
you're doing real Scott Steiner.
I did very badly in math class most years. Well, so I got by. That's
Bobby
how
the Brain Heenan dropped out of high school and he's the brain. It doesn't matter. Oh, it doesn't matter, Moet.
But you just got to say it. That's wrestling. You just got to say it and it'll become true.
Exactly. And that's a AEW Dynamite and we're the Loser Leaves Wrestling. We're the greatest podcast on earth. We said it. It must be true. We're the greatest podcast on earth and all the other podcasts look to us for advice and we thank you. Loser Leaves Wrestling at Instagram. You make sure to review us. Especially you, new Japanese listener, please review us because no one else in the world is. No one else. They're listening, but they're not reviewing us. Please be the first. Be the first Japan. Thank you all so much for listening. This has been Woos and Watts of AEW Dynamite. My name is Red Jefferson.
This is Moet Jaswal. Moet Jaswal.
Moet Jaswal. And we had a great night. Moet.
Yeah, it was very fun.
If you were Freddy Krueger, what would you say as you kill a person?
I would say, smell you later after you turn him into a hot dog and just crumble him over a nice stew.
Boom! Fucking nailed it every time.
It's
I like that.
Thank you, Red. Dear God. Okay. I hate him so much. But it's good for me. I gotta get used to it.